it's not balance, it's boundaries. It's, hey, you're only getting paid to work like 8 to 3. Anything after 3 o'clock, unless they're putting you back on the clock, like no offense to your boss, needs to get moved to tomorrow. It's not gonna go away. And like there's this like Twitter thread that's out there that's called the Great Resignation. And I love it because it's a bunch of millennials that are like quitting their jobs and they're freelancing because they're like, it's just not worth it anymore. It's just not worth it. And like, I get that.
Hi und herzlich willkommen im Selfcare Club, dem Mindfulness- und Produktivitäts-Podcast. Ich bin Max Germann, der Gründer der Selfcare-Brand Noom. Ich unterhalte mich mit Menschen, versuche herauszufinden, wie sie ticken, was sie antreibt und wie sie auf sich selbst achtgeben. Lassen wir uns inspirieren und voneinander lernen, damit wir zur besten Version unserer selbst werden können. Let's go! Today's guest is Dr. Chris Lee. He's a neuroscientist focusing on data-driven mental wellness and high-performance strategies. He helps people open up their emotions and build deeper relationships.
Yeah, so I am a man, and self-care is not really something that I don't think a lot of us are taught. So like learning some of those systems and strategies for anyone out there has like a learning curve with it. The way that I have approached that has kind of been focused on the world of like mental health. And really focused on bringing more science to kind of the classic personal development, law of attraction, you know, kind of change your own reality type of world. And I've bridged those things together using biometrics and kind of like protocols and systems, which I thought was very much lacking in the world of personal development. So over the years, I've you know, built a consulting agency, and then I've moved from consulting into coaching, and then coaching back into consulting and speaking, and just back and forth. So in the midst of all of that, I've realized a couple really crucial things. One of the most important things that I hope everybody can take away from this is that there is no perfect strategy. The perfect strategy is actually the one that you just use on a routine basis, right? Like those small self-care things that you do, like that's what makes the most weight in terms of like changing the way your brain is operating. And another thing outside of that that I've really discovered is that like mental health needs to be like a foundation in your life, but it doesn't have to be the foundation. I work in like 4 different sectors of like self-regulation, and we kind of work the way up. Physical, mental, emotional, and social. And how you work through those, like if somebody tells you like they have the cure or they have like the answer or like the quick fix or like the silver bullet or like the instant results, like
not gonna work.
Run.
Yeah. Maybe we can like start at the basics. You're working a lot in stress management. I guess stress management is also the foundation of everything. Maybe you can like explain us what influence actually stress has on our brain. What is happening?
Yeah, so there's a lot of really interesting studies that keep coming out that like show how bad stress is for the brain. So inside of the brain, we have a bunch of different areas that have different focuses. They have a different job. Just like my liver has a specific job, my stomach has a specific job, the brain in and of itself has these different pathways that have different jobs as well. And one of those jobs is focused on threat detection. And specifically, the name of that area is the amygdala. Now, when we get stressed out, the amygdala sends a signal to the HPT axis, which is a big fancy name that sends information to another area of the brain that basically tells the body to make cortisol and epinephrine. So both those are functions of like a little condylar on top of the kidneys. And that cortisol is what we're starting to get more research on, the way that it's impacting the brain. So stress over long periods of time not only increases the affinity for that amygdaloid pathway to be stimulated, which means the more stressed you get, the easier it is to be stressed, which is like such a bitch. And after that, we also have a lot of gray matter that we start to lose. So the gray and white matter inside of the brain, the outside of it is gray, the inside of it is white. And that white matter, when we start to lose that, we start to recognize neurodegenerative disease. And neurodegenerative disease is like terrifying because we don't exactly know how to stop it. And we don't know exactly like what we can do to like rebuild it, because it's neurons, and neurons are insanely expensive to make. And especially as we get older in age, it starts to create other challenges. So it directly impacts physically the way that our brain is operating, but electrically and chemically as well. It starts to shift our perception. It starts to shift the way that we actually view ourselves and the way that we view our world as well. All the way down to a genetic level, we see changes. Like people that are stressed chronically have like a decrease in like their telomere length, which is your genetic age. When that goes away, it is also incredibly hard to get back.
And when I realize I'm stressed, I'm like super busy, I feel overwhelmed. I try to calm myself down, but I'm not very good at it. So how can I cope with stress? How can I start learning to do so?
Yeah, so I think a big takeaway here is that the stress that we experience isn't just like casual like stress. Like we have to give it an identity. Like we need to know where it's coming from essentially. If you're having like physical stress, for example, like all you've been eating is like French fries and hot wings for like 3 months, your capacity to feel differently is quite literally going to be limited by like your physical body. Like imagine like the last time you had a cold or the flu. It's very hard to feel differently inside of our bodies. So like that physical limitation stops us from feeling differently. So if you have physical limitations, okay, let's start to address that. Sleep, diet, exercise, that's the foundation that I work with everybody at. And everybody wants to go do like the biofeedback and the neurofeedback at the get-go. But that stuff doesn't really matter. Like you can have like the most like organic, non-GMO heirloom seed, and if I like throw it on the blacktop in the middle of the summer, I don't give a shit the potential of that seed. It's not going to grow on the sidewalk. So we have to change the environment before we start planting those seeds. So working on that physical regulation, getting our sleep better, is like crucial. And then after that, we go up the ladder. So we go from physical to our mental life and learning how to organize those 70,000 thoughts, which is really creating certainty and scheduling. It's really, really important. When I go discuss this with my clients, we talk about Spoon Theory. And Spoon Theory is a really awesome blog that a psychologist wrote in 2004. Highly recommend everybody go do it. But essentially, what she says is every day you get 7 spoons. And those 7 spoons are the amount of energy that you have. And if you use all 7 spoons from today and you're not aware of it, you start taking spoons from tomorrow. And if you run out of spoons tomorrow, you start taking them from the next day and the next day and the next day. And soon your nervous system recognizes that there's no energy coming down the pipeline anymore. And the way that you start to break down, physical limitations, mental health challenges. So we discussed that. Above that, we go to emotional health, which is really recognizing that our bodies are cups and our cups are filled up with emotions. Now, we want to have that cup filled up with positive emotions, things that feel good for us. Unfortunately, the cup has a high affinity for holding on to stressful events and trauma. So a huge part of the story that we start with is starting to get people to understand, oh, okay, I have stress. I need to do something with this stress. How do I do like emotional integration? How do I like empty that up so there's more room? Like if this cup is completely full and I just like pour positivity into it, it's just going to spill all over the table, right? Doesn't really work. And then after that, we start to go to our social circles. We start to look at the way that our social life is impacting everything else. So social emotional regulation is really, really important. And then after that, once we start to establish that, it's at that point, like it's usually like 2 to 3 months into this work that I start working with other people on like identity and start to work on the way that they want to feel and the way that they want to participate in some of these stories inside themselves. So I stack those things on one top of another. So if the foundation isn't there, everything kind of falls out. You have nothing to stand on. So your habits and routines are the foundation that I like everybody to focus on.
I mean, foundation obviously is very important. You were already speaking about the environment. Do you mean like the internal environment or external, or what does it mean in general?
Yeah, so it's kind of both. I really focus on what we can control a lot of, which is both of those things. So like my external environment in the morning time, like you're kind of getting a snapshot of it. I have my coffee at like 9 a.m. despite me having been up for like 4 hours now. But I have puzzles here, and like my external environment like very much supports like the goals that I have in my life, which are like mental focus, happiness, presence. So I have things in my life that like let me do things like that. I have a bunch of wooden puzzles that are laying around, my journals here, right? So like everything is very tangible in my life. But in terms of like the inner environment, that's kind of like the differentiation between like stressed and regulated, right? So like when you're
Okay.
stressed, like nothing really makes sense versus when you're regulated, now we're starting to get some of that neuroanatomy working for you.
And so it's important to build, obviously, a nice environment, especially in times, where I believe like where work and life gets very m much, everything gets mixed. So we need, what do you think? Like we need boundaries. We need to create different spaces for us that we know what we have to do, that our brain knows what we should do.
That's exactly it. Yeah. So your brain, a lot of it, 40% of your day is like habitual, right? So that's your brain going to an environment and going, oh, I've been here so many times, I know what to do. Like you don't put your shoelaces on at like the age of like 25 and go, is it make the bunny loop and then it's under the tree, or is it you just do it, right? It's a habit. You can set up those same environmental triggers like wherever you are. It just takes time to build it up. Like it took you time to learn how to tie your shoes. Now, in terms of like work-life balance, you nailed it. It's work-life boundaries now. So like so many of us like work at home. I have like this tiny little death device that I'm talking to you on that I carry around with me. And this is like what I work off of a lot of the time. I make social media content, talk to clients on the phone. How do you like do that with your phone? Well, I have different apps and technology that like put things like Instagram, and LinkedIn and TikTok in like little prisons, so like I can't touch them, because I know that I would. They have such a high affinity for like releasing, different chemicals that are really addicting. Like we know phone addiction is like a real thing. Some people spend like 8 hours a day on their phone, and like if you're working on your phone. Maybe, but still, like 8 hours is a long time. That's half the time you're awake. So just starting to do inventory on some of those things, and then creating boundaries for work. Like this is a conversation that I have inside of my communities all the time, of like
Yeah.
it's not balance, it's boundaries. It's hey, you're only getting paid to work like 8 to 3. Anything after 3 o'clock, unless they're putting you back on the clock, like no offense to your boss, needs to get moved to tomorrow. It's not going to go away, and like. There's this like Twitter thread that's out there that's called the Great Resignation. And I love it because it's a bunch of millennials that are like quitting their jobs and they're
Yeah.
freelancing because they're like, it's just not worth it anymore. It's just not worth it. And like I get that. Like I became somebody that didn't want to go into practice. So like I went to school for 10 years and I don't use that degree. Like I work as a consultant and a public speaker, which like some of the best consultants and public speakers like have a high school degree. I decided that like burning 250K would be a wise choice inside of that. But having those boundaries established and set up have like really given me the opportunity
Yeah.
to evaluate like what's actually important in my life.
Yeah, I don't like the word work-life balance because it has so much negativity. I think it's way nicer to say to establish these boundaries because it actually describes what we should do.
Correct. Yeah.
You were already saying a little bit of self-regulation. What do you mean by that? Is it to learn how to control our emotions or
Yeah, it's better understanding our emotions. So there's a difference between emotions and feelings, which is like going to be important to this conversation. So like let me come back to that. Getting yourself into a state of self-regulation is really getting yourself back into homeostasis. So homeostasis from like a biological standpoint is like this area of balance that we have. And that area of balance is where we can take more calculated action. So it's stressed versus not stressed, right? It's stressed versus happy, it's stressed versus like grounded, stress versus peace, like all of those different things that make like quite a tremendous difference in our lives. Now, how you get there, we always like thought, some happy people like are just happy and like good for them, and like some of us are kind of like quietly inside the confines of our own mind, like they just had it easy, like they can go screw themselves. But really, we know that it's like a process. It's a calculation. Just like if you want to get better at doing like a Rubik's Cube, you need to practice how to do that. right? And the more that you practice, the easier that it becomes. Same thing with self-regulation. It's identifying where the stress is, and we're going to call the stress a fire, and then learning how to put that fire out. So it's getting us back into a state of like aligned action. Lack of motivation is the biggest killer in businesses right now. Like depression is like sweeping through all of these different areas in life. And people are like trying to bring in these productivity experts to like help them build better systems. And then they eventually bring me into these companies. And I'm like, you don't have a productivity problem. You have a people problem. Like, start giving a shit about their mental health and like watch as productivity like starts to skyrocket. So I say that in the context of coming back to self-regulation is better understanding our emotions, because emotions are chemical. So like if a bear kicks down my back door, which is not going to happen, but if a bear kicks down my back door, my system's going to go, oh, that is a threat, right? And I'm going to perceive that threat. My perception of that threat is the feeling, the epinephrine, the cortisol, norepinephrine, all of those different things. That's the emotion. Emotions are chemical. Feelings are perception based. You can't change your emotions. You can influence your feelings, which means learning to change your perception of what we deem is stressful and not stressful. People call that like emotional intelligence and better learning to like reflect and have better practices that give you more tools in the midst of that chaos, because we know really successful people are really good at navigating that stress. So if you can find how to do that for yourself, you're well on your pathway. I have not run into a lot of like very successful people that are happy, healthy, and wealthy that don't have those abilities.
Okay. So I guess the number one question would be, how can I learn it? I know that everyone is different and there are no generalizations we can make, but do you have any tips and tricks you can share how to start?
Yeah, absolutely. So like the first like secret that I'll tell is like, it doesn't matter as much what you're doing is the fact that you're doing it. So like, I think all of us probably know that like meditation, journaling, and exercise are gonna make our lives better. And yet only like 40% of us exercise, less than 5% of us actually write down our goals, less than that actually journal on a daily basis. And all of those are amazing self-regulation tools. Like the amount of people that meditate now is like, it's growing, but it's still really low. Like we know those things are good for us, and we just don't have accountability, and we just don't have the ability to stay like consistent with that. So that's step one. What really matters is the confidence to build consistency, but consistency comes before confidence. So don't put the horse in front of the cart. What I do in my own life is I use biofeedback. Like I talked about, I'm a scientist, I'm a skeptic, like went from biology all the way up through neuroscience and things like that. So like, I really like using science. So I use biofeedback. So like this little tool is called an Elite HRV. And I train my nervous system to be less reactive with this. Basically like slip your finger into this and it hooks up to your phone and it starts to show you different patterns of the way your nervous system is like understanding stress. But it's your autonomic nervous system, and it's a misnomer, which it's like wrongly named, we think, because we can control different perceptions of our like heart rate and breathing rate, which is an autonomic function. So like if I like stop breathing, I'm literally controlling my autonomic nervous system, versus if I start to like make different changes, I can now change the way that my autonomic nervous system is being fired and wired. If I do that consistently over time, I can make that part of my nervous system, which also has the branches of parasympathetic and sympathetic branches, less reactive. It just takes time to build up to those things. So I think having a morning routine and a bedtime routine or a nighttime routine to like unpack the day and like set the scene for the day, those are like the best things. How you do that, that's totally up to you. You know, Dr. Josh just got on here too, and like he's a wizard at explaining these things too, and like the way that the nervous system like shifts in our perceptions of those things. But I think every scientist that I've met, like what matters the most is like, don't seek out the silver bullet, start to find the thing that is like consistent, like build the sustainable pathway. Like that's what you want, because if you build block on block one after another, instead of just trying to like stack a tower in one day, if you miss one day, your entire tower doesn't go away, right? Like, that's why we want that level of sustainability.
And how can I build this habits? What do you have any recommendations? Like start very simple or any?
Yeah, starting simple is going to be your best friend. So, like I said, like I wake up very early in the morning, and I have three non-negotiables that I do every single day. They are non-negotiable. I do them even if it is like really late at night and I don't feel like doing it. If I didn't do them in the morning time, like they get done. Now for me, it's journaling, it's mindfulness, and it's movement. And I do those things every single day. Like I have my journal right here. This is my third journal of the year, right? So like I go through journals because I write a lot. And I make a lot of content. So like I go hard on here and then I like migrate them into other systems. So that's really big. So I journal and I do a level of mindfulness after that, which typically for me is a level of biofeedback. And then I move my body. And those things, like I've consistently stacked them up enough that like I feel so good when I move through those and I do those things that it's what works for me. Now, if you don't even know where to start with some of those things, I typically recommend some kind of mindfulness, some kind of education, and some kind of movement. The pathway that you take those things in is totally up to you. But we have to be able to like get out of the hole. You have to put down the shovel, which means starting to have some kind of evaluation process to see like where the stress is coming from. For me, I knew that like my mental bucket was full of a lot of like negativity, which is why I journal so much, because I just like mentally and intellectually like purge it onto the page, because the page is more forgiving than any other human being on the face of the planet. Like even like my grandma is the sweetest person ever. Like I tell things to my journal that I don't tell to anything else, right? So like I can throw up on there and I'm not worried that anybody's ever gonna read it, right? Like I have a burn policy that like it goes into the fire, right? Like those types of things. It just depends like what your goals are. And I know like this is like not the answer that people want. People like want like here's the three best strategies to like de-stress your life. And I have an entire workshop that like outlines that as well. It's literally called the Stress Detox, but in there I'm going to tell you the same thing. I give you 100 different tools, but it doesn't matter if you don't use them. Like the best tool, like the best thing has been like my little pen and my journal. Like I've built businesses out of that. I've like fixed relationships. Like everything under the sun has happened with like a $2 journal and like a 99-cent pen.
Yeah, and even if, when it comes to journaling, I mean, there's so many different ways to do it. So you also have to find what's the best for you. Write it in the morning, write it in the evening. And when it comes, you were speaking about stacking habits. You mean that we should find something you're already doing every day and then put it on top of that, or how are you doing that?
Yeah, so like my habit stacking is like built into a routine. So in the morning time, for example, I get up at mostly 4:30 every morning, 4:44, and that first 15 minutes, like there's something about like waking up really early at that point that you're still kind of in that daydreamy state, that like I've set intentions for the day yesterday. So before I go to bed, I wake up and like typically there's a piece of paper there and I look at the piece of paper and like that's where I do my mindfulness, right? So I'll sit there and I'll do like a meditation when I wake up in bed. And I have a little meditation cushion set up there. It just works really well. I then come downstairs, drink a big glass of salt water, not very salted water, but salt water, because your brain fires on like sodium potassium channels, which need salt. And you're pretty dehydrated after you sleep. Like just breathing alone, you lose a liter of water, which is a lot. So hydrate yourself, come downstairs, and then I move into like a 10 to 15 minute like movement routine. So I played a lot of soccer, played a lot of sports, did a lot of running. So like my mobility used to be like really, really bad. And I was like had low back pain and all this other crap. Just combination of stress and bad movement. So I go through a mobility routine, and then I go through like a very short, like 5 minute strength routine. And at the end of that, I usually come out here and I have like puzzles set up that I like to do. And I stack one on top of the other. So it's like the same way that you launch a rocket, it's not like button and like go. It's like no, like fire these things up. And by the time I'm like 30 minutes into like my morning routine, like I'm clear, I'm focused, I know what I'm doing that day, I know what I'm excited about, I know the things that I'm not excited about, and I can start to evaluate and better plan out the things that I want to do. most people know that I'm also a single dad. So by the time I have those things booted up and I'm like moving into like my education phase, like make sure that like my daughter comes downstairs and like we have breakfast ready and like I have my puzzles over here and like right now I'm like trying to like do speed Rubik's cubes, but like she has her workbook set up next to me and like she has her own journal because like she watches daddy journal and like she thinks that it's fun. So like we sit down here and we do like no tech in the morning besides music and we just hang out. So like our mornings are very like fluid. They're very easy. We can go paddle boarding or surfing in the morning. Like we have all these different options open to us. Because like those were the things that like really meant a lot to me. Like when I thought about the times when I was a kid, the moments that meant the most, like the ones that I remember from my childhood were the days that I was late for school, like an hour late for school, because like my dad just wanted to take me for a walk in the park in the morning because he had the day off. Those days never happened. And I was
Nice.
like, you know what? Like I'm gonna do that like every day with my daughter, right? If she wants to, like we're gonna go surf in the morning or we're gonna go paddleboard. So like she can skip biology class because like she got to go like hang out in an estuary this month. Like those things matter to me. And I think they matter to her, but she's four, so we'll see.
Okay. So she has all the tools ready, and I guess everyone who was listening also learned a lot and knows how to start. I guess we covered the most important things when it comes to manage stress. Do you want to add anything that we were missing?
So it's interesting that like a large amount of people that tend to follow me, at least from like the statistics that I have, tend to be women, but I know your market is really focused on men. And for men, I think the biggest thing that I would ever recommend is you can't force yourself into being emotionally available. Like if you were told like I was so many times from different people in life that like, you know, you're not emotionally available, like you're all of these different things. Understand that like the same way that like you build strength to do like more bicep curls, like that same muscle is like being flexed when you want to learn to be emotionally available as well. And this is also like there's a lot of people, I have a lot of messages that are like, how do I make my partner more emotionally available? And it's like the Field of Dreams thing, which is an old movie in the States that like if you build it, they will come. And this guy cuts down half his cornfield and he builds a baseball stadium and people come play baseball. It's a whole thing. It's metaphor makes sense in other settings.
Yeah.
But it's making an environment that your partner feels open enough to be vulnerable. That's emotional availability. How you build that, I can't really tell you, but it takes time and it takes patience. So for my guys out there that are like trying to have like a more expressive life, my only recommendation would be like start to ask yourself what a yes and no feels like first, and then start to stack up different emotions after that.
Yeah, wonderful. I think we should all start with talking more, especially we men tend to not talk about our emotions, but we should do that. We should open up, and even if it's with a best friend or whatever, start talking and also listening to ourselves. It's not always about performing all the time. We also
Yeah.
need to learn to listen to ourselves.
Couldn't agree more.
Das war der Selfcare Club, der Mindfulness- und Produktivitäts-Podcast mit Max Germann. Für weitere Folgen abonniert unseren Podcast und schaut auf unserer Website numin.co vorbei. Bis zum nächsten Mal.